Okay, we're beginning here by the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Shalcha b'chazra. He sent away the mother bird, and it came back. Afilu arba'a b'chamisha pe'amim. Even if it happened 4 or 5 times, chayav. You have to keep sending it. Shenemar shaleach tishalach etayim. From the cursory glance at the Mishnah, it seems that the reasoning here is because of the duplication of shaleach tishalach. Amar hareini notel et ha'aim umishaleach et ha'banim chayav. If the person says, I'm going to take the mother and send away the children, the chicks, chayav, then you are in violation. Shneamar shaleach tishalach et ha'aim. You need to send away the mother, not the chicks. Now, in this scenario, there are two different ways you can formulate the issue, and the Mishnah is not so clear about that, which is that in the case where you take the mother and send away the chicks, what violation have you then abrogated? Because the Mishnah indicates that it's shaleach tishalach et ha'aim, which would then indicate that you're violating the asay, but you're not in violation of lot tikach ha'aim ala banim. That would be the way you could read the Mishnah, which is that the violation, the failure over here, is that the mitzvah asay to send away the mother was not accomplished. On the other hand, you're not in violation of lot tikach ha'aim ala banim, because the interpretation of ala banim would be ima banim. So you didn't take the mother with the chicks. You just took the mother and you sent away the chicks. So then the violation would only be the asay, not the lot asay. On the other hand, you could read lot tikach ha'aim al habanim to mean not that it means you can't take the mother with the children, rather you can't take the mother on the children. If that's the case, then when she's hovering or crouched on top of the children, if you take the aim, you are in violation of the lav. So in that case, you would be not only in violation of the asay, as the Mishnah says over here, shaleach tishalach ta'aim, but you'd also be in violation of tikach ha'aim al-banim. So the Mishnah just indicates that you're in violation of kantzipor, because that's the beginning of the pasuk, but not to tell you that you're free of the lav as well. So depending on how you read al-banim, do you read al-banim with the banim, or do you read al-banim on the banim literally, then what you violate here when you take the mother and shoo away the chicks would then either be just an asay or an asay and a lav. Natalet abanim ve'gziran. If he takes the chicks and then puts them back, and you can see here the girsa is lakain, puts them back into the nest. V'achaka chazra ha'im aleihem. And then the mother bird comes back and now is incubating them. Patur mi l'shaleach. There's no longer a din of shiluach hakain, seemingly because you took the beitzim or you took the chicks already, you made it into a kan mizuman, which is that it's now yours. It's not something that kiyur kare kan sipor, but derech, it doesn't have all the trappings of what makes you chayav, because now it's already in your possession. You took possession of the eggs, you took possession of the chicks. When you turn into the nest, you're no longer going to be chayav v'shiluach hakein, because now it's mizuman, instead of being a kiyur kare. Amalei, how may rabbonon the rova? One of the rabbonon asked the rova, based on our mishnah, ve'ema, Shaleach chadazimno, sending it away once. Tishalach trezimnen, then you send it again. That's twice. So basically, what he's saying is, if the limud is from the duplication of the language in the pasuk, then it should be sufficient to accomplish the mitzvah twice to capture shaleach tishalach. And once you've done that, you shouldn't have to have any obligation or residual obligation over here. So Amarlei, Rava responds and says, Shaleach afilu mea pe'amin. It's not from the duplication of the lashon. The word shaleach itself means that you must send it multiple times. Tishalach, that's a different limud. Ein le'ela davar rishut. You would think you're only obligated to do this when it's something that's optional, something where there's no mitzvah involved. The davar mitzvah, or something that you would accomplish a mitzvah with taking the bird, taking the mother, you would think maybe that's mutar. Minayin, how do I know that's also restricted? Tamalomar tishalach mikol makom. You have to send it no matter what. So here you have a almost fundamental machloket as to the nature of shiluach hakein. According to the one who says that you're doing it based on the number of times the pasuk says shaleach tishalach, it means that it's a point mitzvah, which is that there's a given action that you need to accomplish. Once you've accomplished that action, the mitzvah is done. So for instance, when you pick up a lulav, you're done with the mitzvah. You pick it up again. You're not doing the mitzvah again. You've discharged your obligation. So here too, when you have a mitzvah of shiluach hakein, you sent it away, you did the mitzvah. Okay, so it asks you to do it twice because it says shaleach to shalach. But beyond that, there's no obligation to do it. Again, it's a point mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that has a discrete action involved with it. And once you've accomplished that discrete action, you're done. That seems to be the position of the question over here. Rava's response is that that's not the type of mitzvah it is. It's a mitzvah of shaleach. Shaleach like tzitzit and tefillin, which are mitzvot midiyot, which means that they are constant. Every time you do it, you accomplish a mitzvah. So just because you wore tzitzit doesn't mean if you wear them again, you're not going to be accomplishing a mitzvah. Just because you put on tefillin doesn't mean if you put on tefillin again, you're not going to accomplish a mitzvah. The mitzvah is a continuous mitzvah, and the demand is always there for you to accomplish such a mitzvah. And that's what Rava says. The nature of shiluach hakein is similar, which is that shaleach. You need to ensure that this bird is sent away. It doesn't matter how many times you do it, there's always an obligation to ensure that the bird is sent away. Now, you could, if you want, then correlate that it's not mukhrak, but with the reasons behind shiluach hakein, depending on whether it's because of rachmanut on the briyot versus the person learning a certain amount of midot or lessons about it. You could try to correlate it and say that the difference in the perspective is also governed by what you think the reason is. Even without that, you could see them having this difference in the understanding of what type of mitzvah to say we are discussing here. Amalei Rabbi Abba b'reit Rabbi Yosef by Abba the Rav Kahana. Ela taima dichtav rachmana tishalach. It's only because of the second word that it blocks us from saying that you could use it for a mitzvah. Halav hachi, had it not been for that, hava amina, the dvar mitzvah, when it comes to a mitzvah, that you could go ahead and utilize it. Lo asei, velo tasehu? How could you say that? The construct, the mitzvah of shiluach hakein is both an asei and a lo tasei. It is shaleach tishalach, which is the asei, and there's lo tikach haim ala banim, is a mitzvah lo tasei. So now you have an asei and a lo tasei, v'ein asei doche lo tasei v'asei. Which mitzvah are you thinking of that would override this mitzvah? Any mitzvah to say is not strong enough or does not have the capacity to override a lo tasei and an asei. So what is the hava amina that you need a pasuk to tell you otherwise? Why would you think that you could use it for a mitzvah and violate this din? And that's why you need tishalach to tell you don't do that. You wouldn't even have that hava amina because it's an asei and a lo tasei. And you can't override that. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha davar v'shakla la'aim. That it's a case where he violated. He didn't heed the mitzvah, and he took the aim without shooing away, or ala banim, or he didn't shoo away the mother and took the chicks, the lav avre, because he violated the lav. And now, asehu de'ika, what remains behind, what is residual now is an asei, leite asei, v'lidache asei. And now let us say that the residual asei can be overridden by the asei of the mitzvah. Kamash Malon, that we don't say such. Now, this is a very interesting construct that the Gemara is offering. When we have an asei, for instance, when you come to Yom Tov, and you have an asei and a lota asei when it comes to Yom Tov, that means if you have another mitzvah, like for instance, Sreifat Kodoshim, if you have notar from Kodoshim, it's a classic case, Korban HaPesach, if anything left over in the morning from Korban HaPesach, you can't burn it that morning, even though there's a mitzvah to burn notar, because Pesach is Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov, you can't be Sareif Kodushim. The mitzvah to say of burning the notar does not override the mitzvah to say and lota say of Yom Tov. And so therefore you have to wait until the second morning. That's how the Chazal frame it. You have to wait until the morning of Chol HaMoed in order to burn the kodoshim that are left over from the Korban HaPesach. That's your classic example. Now, why is it that when you have an asei that is facing an asei and a lo tasei, it doesn't work? So Tosafot, other places in Shas, has two formulations of why it doesn't work. The one formulation is that it does work. The asei is doche the lo tasei. The only problem is that you have an asei left over. There's still an asei there, and that's what's preventing you from doing this. So for instance, in the example that we gave, the asei of burning the notar overrides the lota asei of Yom Tov. The only problem is you still have an asei of Yom Tov left, and that you can't violate, and that's why you can't burn the notar on Yom Tov. That's one way to formulate it. The other way to formulate it is to say that an asei is docha lota asei. But that's only when it's a plain lotase. When you have a lotase that has an assay together with it, the assay comes to strengthen the lotase and say it's a super lotase. Since it's a super lotase, then the assay that you have does not override that lotase because it's just too strong. But that means that both the assay and the lotase are residual, they're there, and you'd be in violation of both of them if you went ahead and took it. Now, Tosafot already recognizes that this construct in the Gemara is different. Mikan kash leperish ha-riva. This is a problem for the riva who has the first formulation that we said, which is when you have an assay and a lotase, another assay will wipe out the lotase, but the assay will be residual. He says our Gemara doesn't sound like that at all. Because here the Gemara is saying if he does do this, then he'd be in violation of the lav. He was over. He didn't listen. And he took the chicks without shooing away the mother. He took the mother without shooing her away. And the Gemara says he's in violation of the lav. According to the formulation that an assay is doka the lotase and all that's residual is the assay, then you wouldn't be in violation of the lav. You wouldn't get makot for this lav. Yet the Gemara here says explicitly that you were over the lav. And the assay is still there. So not only is it that the lav is there, but the assay is there, which sounds much more like the second formulation that we put together, which is that when you have an assay going up against an assay and a lotase, the assay has no power to override because the lotase is very strong. The assay strengthens the lotase. Now over here it says that once you violated the lav, then you have an assay versus an assay. That also may not be true because if you have a lotase together with the assay, maybe that tells you that the assay is a stronger assay and you shouldn't be able to violate it. Over here, the Gemara is willing to entertain the fact that the assay would doka the residual assay. That might have to do with a machloket with regards to when you have an assay and a lotase together, what is the meaning of having the combination of them? Does that mean that it's really a mitzvah lotase? Or does it mean it's really a mitzvah assay? Or is it both? The Baliyat Tosafot seem to indicate that it is something that has both character traits to it. The Ramban, in some places, notes that it depends on what the primary objective of the mitzvah is. Certain mitzvot, the lav is coming to bolster the assay, and in other mitzvot, it's the other way around. The assay is coming to bolster the lav. So, for instance, when you take a mitzvah like Hashavat Aveda, the primary mitzvah there is the assay to return the Aveda. The fact that there's also a lav there is only to bolster that fact. Lo yuchal italeim. Don't look away. Don't take it for yourself. All those restrictions are only to bolster the assay of returning the aveda. So we would call it primarily a mitzvah assay rather than saying that it's an assay and a lotase. It's an assay that happens to have a lotase with it. But there are other mitzvot where the lotase is the primary aspect. And the assay is only coming to bolster the lotase. So for instance, in most cases of a lav and itak, the assay would be true, which is both by gzela, by notar. The primary aspect is the lotase. Don't leave it over. Don't steal. Now, if you do leave it over, you do steal, here's an assay. Now there it happens to be an itak, the assay is rectifying. But it's the same concept, which is that the primary mitzvah is not to burn the notar, and the primary mitzvah is not to give back gzela. The primary mitzvah is not to steal and not to leave over. Or like by Kodoshim, where the restriction against eating it bitum'ah is the major component, that lav. Vabasar, kol tahor yochol basar. That's not coming that assay to be an assay inherently. It's to bolster the lo tasay, that is that you can't eat it bitum'ah guf, or you can't eat it bitum'ah basar. And over there, the assay is subordinate to the lav, because the lav is the primary aspect. And the assay is there to strengthen the position of the lav through an iser assay. So there again, the assay is bolstering the lotase. Whereas Tosafot sees many of those mitzvahs just having an assay and a lotase. The Ramban says you have to look at the objective of the mitzvah before determining what type of mitzvah is it. Is it a lav or is it an assay? Because it might be that one is just helping the other. All of that to say over here, that might relate to whether the formulation here is similar to the formulation that we mentioned before. Which is before we said the possibility that the assay bolsters the lav, and therefore the assay can't be dochet. So then, what does that mean in the residual? Can you say also that the lav bolsters the assay to the point where the assay can't be dochet the assay as well? If that's true in that formulation, then what our Gemara is saying here doesn't fit into that formulation either. Because over here we're saying that the assay would be able to be doka the assay once you violated the lav. So therefore, if you think that the assay is also strengthened by the lav, the same way the lav is strengthened by the assay, then this Gemara's formulation also would be problematic. If you think like the Ramban, that maybe the assay is bolstering the lav, but not the other way around, the lav is not bolstering the assay, because over here the primary mitzvah is lotikachayim ala banim, shaleach nishalach is just a mechanism for facilitating that lotikachayim ala banim. In that case, you might say that the lav is a strong lav, because it has an assay associated with it, but you might not say the assay is a stronger assay because of the lav. Once you take the lav out of the picture, like when you violated it, maybe the assay would not be something that's so strong that you can't override it. Where it says, the situation here is that we would have a havamina, that the assay should be doka the assay, kamash malon, that we don't say that. Gemara here is making a reference to the Gemara in Makot with regards to lav ani tak the assay. Lav ani tak the assay, we know, doesn't get malkot. The person's not in violation of the lav because they have a way to rectify the situation. When the Torah says, loti tiuri mimenu ad boker, don't leave it over until the morning. No time you may want to book care, but HT's rope, whatever's left over, you got to burn. So therefore, there's a rectification or there's a mechanism for solving the lav that you violated. Given that, the Gemara has two formulations of what it means to have a lav and itak d'assay. One of them is kimo velo kimo. Rashi reads it, and Rashi is very extreme in this position, and the Balei Tosafot and Makot point out that Rashi over here is different than what Rashi says in Makot, which is Rashi says over here, that if you don't accomplish the mitzvah to say within a toch de dibor, then you violated the lav. Meaning that the only time the assay rescues you from the lav is if you do the assay immediately after you've done the lot assay. If you've done a toch de dibor, then the assay becomes the quote unquote punishment, rectification of the lav, and then you're not in violation of the lav. If you wait more than toch de dibor, even though there might be an assay, the lav has been violated. On the other hand, there's another view, which is bitlo below bitlo, which means that as long as you have a possibility of accomplishing the assay, you haven't violated the lav. The only time you're in violation of the lav is if you eliminate the assay. So for our instance, if shooing away the mother bird is always available to you, then you're never in violation of lo tikachayim al banim until you get rid of the mother. If you shech the mother, now there's no possibility of doing the assay anymore. That's when you violate the lav. So according to Rashi's view over here, kaimo velo kaimo means if you do it immediately, the assay will solve your problem. You don't do it immediately, you're in violation of the lav. Bitlo velo bitlo means you're not in violation of the lav until you eliminate the assay. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that when it comes to kaimo velo kaimo, means that if you have done the assay or haven't done the assay, and the assay is open to you, the only problem with that is, how's that different than bitlo velo bitlo? The answer is that by bitlo velo bitlo, you're only in violation of the lav when the assay is eliminated. So when you shech the bird, that's when the violation of the lav happens. On the other hand, with kimo velo kimo, the lav has been violated. The only question is, it's suspended because of the assay. If you don't accomplish the assay, meaning that somehow the assay is taken away, you shech the bird, then you were in violation of the mafreya. Retroactively, you were in violation of the lav from the moment that you violated it. That's the way the Rambam formulates the difference. The difference has impact over here, which is, hanicha, it works well according to the one who says, kimo, velo kimo, because over there, you could be in violation of the lav. We just said here, if he was avar, v'shakle, he took the mother, he was in violation of the lav. So now, you have to be in violation of the lav now to have the lav be taken out of the picture, and then say what's residual is an assay versus an assay. But that means you have to violate the lav. That works according to the one who says kimo velo kimo because you can be in violation of the lav now. And then the assays could be left to work out between each other. Alamantatani bitlo velo bitlo, according to the one who says that the assay is still around and therefore the lav is not violated unless you mevatel the assay, kama de lo shachto, till you shech the mother bird, lo avre la lav, you haven't violated the lav. According to the one who says bitlo velo bitlo, the lav is only violated when the assay is also violated. So you're still stuck with an assay and a lav, and then the assay or whatever mitzvah you're trying to do can't override an assay and a lav. And then where is the havamina to say that another mitzvah, an assay, will override this mitzvah? This mitzvah always has an assay and a lot assay. And how could you override it? Bitu, the Rabbi Yehuda damar shaleach mi'ikara mashma. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the mitzvah of shaleach tishalach is only before the fact, which means that send away the mother bird, shoo her away, take the children. But if you don't do that, you don't have the option to do it afterwards. You can only do it beforehand. Afilo asay nami leka. In that case, there's not even an asay here. If that's the case, then why isn't it an asay dochelot asay? And it should be overridden. So ella amar marbaravashi, kagon shenatla almanat lishaleach. He picked up the mother bird with the intention of shooing her away, sending her away. The lav leka, asehu deika. The lav is gone, because when he picked up the bird, he did it in a manner that was mutar. After he picked her up, he didn't send her away. He changed his mind, he just didn't do it. So now the lav, what happened at the moment you took her, and the moment you took her, there was no lav at that moment, because you did it with the right intent. Once you don't send away the bird, now the only thing residual that you haven't done is violate the asay. Violate the asay, vilidche asay. Let us have an asay come and override the asay. Another mitzvah will override the mitzvah of shiluach hakein over here. The question is, what mitzvah are we speaking about? Where do you need birds that you're doing a mitzvah that the shiluach hakein should be relevant? Excellent. So the cases are cases of korbanot. That would be, for instance, a kan yoledet. A pair of birds that you need for a woman who gave birth to be mitaher herself, or tarata mitzora. Those are items by which you would require these birds, and they'd be a mitzvah. So now, the only problem with that is that we generally have a position that mitzvah asay dochalot asay, or even asay doch asay, is only when the accomplishment of the asay is simultaneous with the violation of the lav. Which means that the moment you do the asay, the lav is violated. If you have to violate the lav in order to do the asay in the future, over there we don't say asay dochalot asay. It has to be be'idne at the same moment, simultaneously. Over here, by definition, if you're bringing korbanot, the violation happens prior to the bringing of the korbanot. Take the bird when you're not supposed to take the bird. And even though you're going to do a mitzvah with it, the mitzvah itself is only accomplished later on when you actually bring the korbanot. So then over here, why is the Gemara even have a hava mina that you should have the potential to violate this asay or even the lav of shiluach hakein? So either you have to say that this Gemara does not require be'idne, does not require it to be simultaneous. Again, the Gemara in other places brings that concept and seems to think that it's an overarching demand that when every time you have a mitzvah being docha mitzvah, it has to be simultaneous. There are some places where the Gemara does not speak about that, and maybe this is an example of that. Or, as we're about to say in a second, maybe the reason that the asay here would be docha asay is so powerful that it overcomes that deficit. And that is, my ume dehay asay mehay asay. You have to explain to me why over here you would have an asay doche asay. When I say asay doche lot asay, is because asay is stronger than the lot asay, and that's why it overrides. Hey, Rishonim give all different reasons for it. A mitzvah and asay is me'ava, lot asay is me'ira, so ava overcomes zira. I mean, you can formulate all different reasons as to why an asay is greater than a lot asay. But when you're dealing with two asays, how do you know which asay to give priority to? I would have thought because gadol shalom sheben ish liishto, the having peace or shalom bayit is so great. Shari amra Torah, the Torah tells us shmo shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu shenichtav kedusha, the name, the holy name of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, which there's an isur to erase it. Despite all of that, and given its elevated status of kedusha, yimachel amayim. You still erase it in order to bring a husband and wife back together by the Mei Sotah. So that means that the mitzvah of Shalom Bayit is so great that we allow for the erasure of God's name, which is a serious violation, something that we wouldn't even consider, yet we do it for Shalom Bayit. That indicates this is a type of assay that is a super assay. By mitzora, came into kama delo mitaher, asur betashmish amita. A mitzora, as long as he's not tahor, he's still restricted in Teshmish HaMitah. Dichtiv, because it says with regards to the Mitzorah and his process of Tara, Yishev Michutz La'olo Shivat Yamim. He's got to stay away from his house for 7 days during the process of Tara. Olo Zo Ishto. And Olo is a reference to his wife, as Rashi says. By Har Sinai, it says, Shuvah Lachem Lo'olechem. That that you're allowed to go back to your wives post Matan Torah, and the diak was you are, but Moshe is not. That teaches you that the word olo is a reference to ishto, mikan shasur b'tashmish amita. Here we know, so he has to be away from his wife for 7 days. Now, as Rashi points out over here, you have 7 days, it's from the point of when he begins the Tara process until he brings his korbanot. That you can't get out of. He has to be mikutz la'olo, he can't be together with his wife. What they're referencing too is that there's a daya, that's a kal v'chomer. If during the process of Tahara, he's not allowed to be together with his wife, that means that in the period before also, he would not be permitted to be with his wife. That's why we would want to expedite the Tahara in order to allow him to be together with his wife. Not because the next 7 days he's going to be able to be together with his wife, but after that point he will. Because if he doesn't have the Tahara, it would be asur for him to be with his wife for all the time that he is now a Mitzora. Maldutema, Kevin dasur b'tashmisha mita, leita asei didei, v'litka asei dishiluach hakein. Because of the fact that it's such a great mitzvah of Shalom Bayit, because as long as you don't do this Tahara process, he's going to be separated away from his wife. So therefore, to bring him back together with his wife, there's such a high value or high premium on that, that we're willing to have the assay of bringing the korbanot mitzorah to make him tohor, so that he can go back to his wife. So we're willing to violate the shiluach hakein. That's why the assay would be docha the assay. And again here, maybe even shalom b'yidnei, even not simultaneously. It's clear still here, when you take the bird, that's not, the mitzvah is not accomplished. You have to either shech the bird, or shoo it away in order to accomplish the two birds of the mitzvah's tahara. So either way, you're going to have to do a separate action to do the mitzvah to say, and here you're violating the shiluach hakein before that. Despite that fact, we would think maybe this is such a strong, compelling reason that you should be able to do it. Kamash Malon, that's what Rava teaches us, is tishalach, that you don't have that option. You have to send away the bird, shoo away the mother bird, irrespective of what the other options are. What's interesting to note over here is that absent the tishalach and the pasuk, the havami of the Gemara would have been true, and that is that a mitzvah asay of shalom bayit would take precedence over another mitzvah asay, and that will have halachic ramifications in certain situations as to what we give priority to, because of this idea that shalom bayit is such an essential factor and such a prominent goal that we would override other things in order to accomplish shalom bayit. And for that reason, you need a pasuk here to tell you otherwise by shiluach hakein. What you're pointing out is also another somewhat of a deficit here, which is that we have a principle, Shmuel's principle, with regards to asei docha lo tasei, or even maybe asei docha asei, which is efshar lekayim shnehem. If you can do both of them, we don't allow you then to violate the lav or to violate the asei. Over here, it should be possible to accomplish the mitzvah of shiluach hakein, and I've accomplished the mitzvah of Tarata Mitzorah. So that makes it that you'd have to then describe the case here as being a case where your only access to a bird is this bird of the Shiluach HaKain. Otherwise, again, it wouldn't make so much sense that we would allow you to do this, because if you can accomplish both of them, we don't allow you to violate one to accomplish the other. All right, next Mishnah. Notem Ayim Alabanim. The person violates Lotikach Ayim Alabanim, whether that means that he took the chicks or the eggs without shooing away the mother, or according to some, even if he took the mother without shooing her away. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, loke, ve'eino mishaleach. You get malkot, and there's no shiluach hakein. Now, the Gemara will discuss what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position. The Gemara already before hinted to us what Rabbi Yehuda's position is, but it's one of two options. It's either that he believes that lavani takte asei gets malkot anyway, or it's because he believes that, as we mentioned in the Gemara before, so we already gave it away, he believes that the shaleach tishalach is before. The tikach ha'im al banim is, you should shoo away the bird in order that you don't look tikach ha'im al banim. It's not a solution to the problem. It's not once you've taken the ha'im al banim, now shaleach tishalach in order to resolve the problem. He thinks shaleach is before, and that's why you get malkot, and that's why there's no reason to send it anymore. Chamim omrim, mishamleach ve'en olokeh. You can rectify it. It's a lavan itak de'asei. Shaleach tishalach means both before and after. Either way, you're supposed to do it this way first. If you didn't do it, you still have the option to do it afterwards. Ze'aklal, ko mitzvah lo tasei she'esh bakum asei, ain't looking alea. Anytime you have a mitzvah lo tasei that has an asei as a rectification, you don't get malkot for it. We view the asei as being the quote-unquote punishment, the resolving, the rectification of the violation, and therefore there's no need for malkot over here. Boy Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel. Time of the Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda? Mishum the Sabar Alav Shinitak that say Lokin Alav. He disagrees fundamentally with the Chachamim that Alav and Itak that say you do get Malkotan. Or Dilma Ba'alma Sabar Alav Shinitak that say in Lokin Alav. Or maybe he subscribes to the view of the Chachamim. Bahokainu Taima. And the reasoning over here is Mishum the Kazabar Shaleach Mi Kara Mashma. And Shaleach means before the fact, not after the fact. Means you should shoo away the bird in order not to be in violation of Lotikachayim Abanim. But if you were Lokeachayim Abanim, Shaleach is no longer relevant. That's not a rectification. Tashma. We have a Braita. Ganav Gazlan. Yeshlan Bichlal Malkot. Divi Rabbi Yehuda. And Ganav and Gazlan require a Malkot, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now, Gneva and Gzela are classic examples of Alav and Itak Laseh. Vahach Alav Shinitak Lasehu Derachman Amar Lotikzol. Don't steal. If you do steal, then you have to return the gzela that you took. There's no question that the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda here is not because heshivat gzela comes before the gzela. You can't be meshiv gzela until you've stolen. So it's clear that here that the asay is afterwards and not before. And yet Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you get malkot. So that would be shema minah, time to Rabbi Yehuda, mishum kazavar, lav shenitak lasay lokin alav. Very clear here that this is a lav and itak, let's say. And therefore, he must believe that you get malkot. He's arguing fundamentally with the chachamim. Amalei Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira responds to Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, lav amina luchu. Haven't I told you in the past? Kol metnita de lo tanya. Any breita that was not brought down, Beit Rabbi Chia or Beit Rabbi Hoshaya, that wasn't brought in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Hoshaya, talmidim of Rabbi, then mishabeshtahi. It is not authoritative. Lo totvu mina beit midrusha. Don't bring it into the beit midrash. The only authoritative brightot are the brightot of Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Hoshaya. The reason being is that Rabbi chose the Mishnayot and he was Mesader of the Mishnayot. What he left out was for obvious reasons that he left them out. He must have thought they were wrong or incorrect and he left them out. So then to bring a brighta after Rabbi left them out is very questionable because for whatever reason Rabbi felt that they were not authoritative. Whether there was a mistake in them or whether he disagreed with their halachic psak. But we know that the brightot are no different than the Mishnayot until Rabbi came and was misader them into a Mishnah. So the brightot do carry weight. The only question is, how do we know if they're authoritative? What the Gemara says is brightot that were vetted by Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Hoshaya because they were done both as talmidim of Rabbi and probably under the auspices of Rabbi and knowing the Mishnayot, they're the only ones who determine what brightot are valid, authoritative, and therefore they can be used to question or to explain Mishnayot. On the other hand, if you find other random brightot, those are not considered to be authoritative and you can't ask questions for them, you can't bring them. The reasoning Rashi says is because the Yesh Tanaim, there are many Tanaim, Shemosifim HaMishnatam Bididomi, they extrapolate information that they know. They say, for instance, our Mishnah that says, Rabbi Yehuda says you get Malkot, Vishiluach HaKein, if you violate it. So it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold of Lamani Taklaseh, you don't get Malkot for. The Tana looks at that and says, all right, I'm going to extrapolate that and I'm going to create a new Braita that says, by Gneva and Gzela, there's also Malkot according to Rabbi Yehuda. They made an assumption. They made the assumption about what Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is in our Mishnah, and then they extrapolated it. The problem with extrapolation is, that it's not really a breita. That's someone's own svara. It's not really a breita. And that's what Rabbi Zeira is saying to them. You can't bring me a breita, just a breita. This isn't the breita that's found in the collections of Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Hoshaya. It's not authoritative because it might be that some Tana just extrapolated the din from our Mishnah and then gave this other example, even though it may not be true. We have no Mesorah about it. Dilma, maybe the breita should have read, Eina Bichlal Malkot Abrahim. It's not subject to Malkot Abrahim. So now you have a second issue, which is not only do we worry about Tanaim extrapolating information and creating Braita, we also worry about the veracity of the Braita. Is the Braita's text actually correct? Or maybe someone made a mistake and changed around from Eina to Yeshna, and that mistake then can cause you a problem. So given that this is an authoritative Braita, we can't use it to prove to us as to what the position of Rabbi Yehuda is. Tashma, the Tani Rabbi Hoshaya for Rabbi Chia. So now we're bringing a braita from Rabbi Chia and Rabbi Hoshaya. Lo tashuv v'shav, lo techaleh v'kila. If you have a restriction of lota shuv, which is by shichcha, ki tekzor tzircha basadecha b'shachachta omer basadeh, lota shuv lekachto lager liyatom liyamenayeh, l'mani v'recha Hashem elokecha b'chol maseh yedecha. Then you have a restriction to go back and take that which you forgot, lota shuv lekachta, but you went back and violated it. Lotechaleh, you may not cut off the corner of your field, v'kila, that's peah, and he cut it anyway. Yeshtan bichlal amalkot arba'im divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says you get malkot for that. That is a classic case of a lav ani takli asay. It says don't cut off the corner of your field because it says b'kutzurchem ekitzirachem lo techale pa'at sadecha b'kutzurachem v'lechem kitzurcha lo techalekate le'ani v'leger tazovotam ani Hashem elokechem. And then it says afterwards you have to give it ani lager. From there, it would sound like, don't cut the corner of your field. But if you did cut the corner of your field, then you have to give it to them anyway. Don't pick up that which you forgot behind. If you do pick it up, you have to give it to them. So it's a lav, hanitak, le'asay. And yet, we now have a braita from Rabbi Shai and Rabbi Chia saying the Rabbi Yehuda says you get malkot for that. Must be, mishum, shmamina, taimit Rabbi Yehuda, mishum, tasavar, lav, shintak, le'asay, lokin alav. That he fundamentally disagrees with the chachamim, and says, Lavani Takta, say you do get malkot for. But it says, Dilma Hatam Hainu Tam. Maybe the reason over there is different, because Zavar Tazov Mi Karamashma. Because it says, Laniv Lager Tazov Otam. Maybe Tazov Otam doesn't mean after the fact, but similar to the case of Shaleach to Shalach Ataim, it means beforehand. The reason you're not supposed to go back, and you're not supposed to cut off the corner of your field, is because you should have left them for the Ani. Similar to what we discussed before, what's the primary aspect of this mitzvah? It's the asay, which is to give this to the aniim. The lot asay is to prevent you from violating the asay. The lot asay bolsters the asay, which is tazovotam. Given that, the tazovotam is the original mitzvah. And then the lav comes to support that mitzvah. But not to say to you that after you violate the lav, you can do the mitzvah. Tazovotam is what you're supposed to be doing over here, not the rectification of the lav. So he could read it the same way he reads Shiluach HaKein, and you wouldn't have any proof from here. So Amar Le Ravina Le Ravashi Tashma. So we can learn it from this. Lo Tutiru Mimenu Ad Boker. Not allowed to leave Notar over until the morning. And that which is left over by Eish Tisrofu, you have to burn it. Ba Katul Itein Asei Achad Lo Tasei. The Torah comes here clearly to give you an asei to rectify the Lo Tasei. Lo Lamar Achash She'ein Lokin Alav Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So here it's explicit that Rabbi Yehuda believes, Lav Ani Takta Asei, you do not get Malkot on it, similar to the position of the Chachamim. That tells us that Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning why by Shiluach HaKein you do get Malkot is not because he believes Lav Ani Takta Asei gets Malkot, but rather because Rabbi Yehuda's belief is that the Asei is before the Lav. There's an Asei to send away or shoo away the mother bird so that you don't violate Lo Tikach HaEim HaBanim. Not to rectify it afterwards. Shalech to Shalach is the mitzvah, and Lo Tikach HaEim HaBanim, once you violate it, there's no more mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein, and that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda. That braita that we just quoted then has a Rabbi Yaakov that comes afterwards and says, Lo Min HaShem Hu. That's not the reason you're patur over there. The reason you're patur over there is because it's a lav shem bo maseh. But the violation of leaving notar over is a lav that does not have a maseh involved with it. It's a passive violation. That's the reason you don't get Malkot over there. To which the Gemara then says, Rabbi Yehuda must believe, Lav Shein Bo Maaseh, Lokin Alav. And when it comes to passive violations, you are getting Malkot, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda had to resort to Lav Ani Takta Asei to say that you are patur by notar, because he would have believed it was a Lav Shein Bo Maaseh, you would have gotten Malkot. Shma Mina, from here you see, time of the Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum Tazavar, Shaleach Mi Karamashma, Shma Mina. You see from here that the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position is because he believes that shaleach means before the fact, not after the fact. Had it been allowed in the talk that say he would have agreed there's no malkot. The reason you get malkot here is because there's no assay afterwards. The assay all applies beforehand. Amalei Ravini the Ravashi, Matnina Nami Deka. Our Mishnah is Minduyak. Tani, Anotel Eim Avanim. In our Mishnah it says if you violate the restriction against taking the Eim Avanim, Rehudomer Loket, you get malkot. Ve'eino mishaleach, and you don't have to send it away. If you say according to Rabbi Yehuda, the reason that you get malkot over here is because the lav nitakta say you get malkot,
loke umishaleach mi bayale. Then his position should have been, you get malkot, and you still have to do the essay. Why does he say over here that you don't have to do the essay? Where it says, Dilvahaki kamar b'matzniptan. Einin niftar ad de malkinlet. It might be that it doesn't really matter. Einu shaleach doesn't mean you don't have to send it away. Einu shaleach means it's not going to solve your problem. Lokev einu mishaleach, because the mishaleach is not going to take away the malkot. It's not because you don't have to send it away. It's just that the sending away is not going to solve your problem. You're going to get malkot no matter what you do. Ad kama mishalcha. How far do you need to send it away? Now, it seems to me that this Gemara is coming, like almost a, we had a full stop, and we have a new Gemara now, which is a fundamental question, which is, ad kama shalcha. How far away do you need to send the bird? But, interestingly enough, Rashi says, ad kama shalcha im natla, if you violated the law. Rashi makes this a question of bidyavad, not a question of lechatkila. Most read it as a question of lechatkila. These are the fundamentals of the mitzvah. How far do you need to send it? Rashi says that this is a question about if you violated it, ad kama shalcha, how far do you have to send it away? The Rashash of Ir says that the reason Rashi does that is because there's a difference. When you are going lechatkila to send away or shoo away the mother bird, any amount of shooing would have sufficed, because the mother bird is not in your possession yet. You haven't done anything that makes it yours. So simply shooing it away would have been sufficient, because it would be obvious. Yatsa mitachat yado, there would be yotze. Once you've already violated the law and you took the mother bird, or you did something, then the ad kama shalcha becomes a much more fundamental question. How do you not only do the mitzvah, but how do you get it out of your possession? Basically, how do you make it hefker again, so that when you send it away, it's really sending it away? So therefore, he says, that's why Rashi formulated it this way, as being a question about bidyavad and not the chatkila. So I'm reviewing that, k'dei sh'tetzei mitachat yado. It has to leave your possession, your auspices, or basically, it has to be far enough away that you can't just grab it back. You can't just pull it back. That is a sufficient type of shiluach. You don't have to do more than you were expected to do in the original shiluach. But me mishalcha, how do you send it away? Rav Huna amar biragleha, Rav Yehuda amar b'agafeha. Rav Huna says by its legs, Rav Yehuda says by its wings. We're going to read it now the first way Rashi brings, which he says, kach shamati, I heard this is the explanation, which means that when you go to shoo away the bird, you have to pick it up by its legs and throw it away. Or you have to take it by its wings and push it away. That would be the understanding here, by mem mishalcha, how do you send it away? Rav Huna amar biragleha, the reason by its legs is dechtiv, mishalchei regel hashor v'achamor. This is actually the proof in the Gemara in Baba Kama that the shilach is the nezek of regel, because the word shalach and regel are found together in the pasuk, which is also over here. Mishalchei regel hashor v'achamor. You send off by the legs of the shor and the chamor. Rav Yehuda amar be'agafeha. You do it by the wings. Da'aknafeha ninhu. Because they are its wings. It's an interesting statement, but I think the interpretation of it is that the bird does not have four legs like animals. Animals have hind legs and four legs. For the bird, the hind legs are its legs. The four legs are its arms, are its wings. And that's the structure of the animal, the bones and everything like that. The wings of a bird are similar in structure to the arms or the four legs of the animal. And so therefore what Rav Yehuda is saying is the wings are the legs of the bird. And so therefore, you should send it away by its wings. Rashi asks your question. He says, kach shamati, the explanation. He says, I have no idea why you would have to do this. Number one is, why do you have to touch the bird at all in order to shoo it away? Number two is, the pasuk that you're bringing is not a proof to that. The pasuk is saying that the shor and the chamor move by their legs. It's not saying that they pick them up by their legs and throw them and move them along. The proof text you're bringing doesn't even prove what you're looking for. Yes, it says there's an association between shiluach and legs, but it doesn't say to you, pick it up by its legs to move it. It simply says that they move by their legs. But what does it have to do with holding it by its legs? So Rashi asks you a question. For that reason, he brings a different answer. Now, it's possible, based on what Rashi said before, that it's already in your possession. Rashi said the whole case here is bidyavad. If it's bidyavad, it's already in your possession, the question might be, what do you do to shoo it away? You pick it up by its legs and throw it away. You pick it up by its wings and throw it away. Could be the question. But even given that, you could still just throw the bird away. You can shoo it away even once it's in your possession. So Rashi therefore reads this is not a question about how you send away the bird, but rather what is considered to be sending away the bird. When you shoo the bird away, is it sufficient that the bird walks away? Or do you need the bird to fly away in order to be accomplishment of Shiluach HaKein? And that's the proof text that they're bringing. The proof text that Rav Huna brings is Biragleha. When animals walk by their legs, that's called Shiluach. And so too, when the bird walks away, that's called Shiluach. Rav Yehuda says, that's good for animals, that's not good for birds. Birds fly, birds move by their wings. And therefore, the mechanism by which you'll accomplish Shiluach is only through the wings. His proof is the next case in the Gemara, which is why he thinks it's connected, which is a case where, how the Gazinu, the Gafa, there was this individual who clipped the wings of the bird, Vishalcha, and then sent it away. Va'akarkach tafsa, and then he grabbed it back. Obviously, the bird can't fly, so when he sent it away, the bird walked away, and then he went and grabbed it back after he had accomplished Shiluach HaKein. So, Nagde Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda gave him Malkot. Amrele Zil Rabbi Lagadafel. Go grow out its wings, Vishalcha, and then you can send it. So now, this, according to Rashi, bolsters his explanation. Machloka before was between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. Rav Huna says it's enough for the animal to walk on its legs. Rav Yehuda said it needs to fly. And Rav Yehuda here is enforcing his position. The bird walked away, and Rav Yehuda says you didn't accomplish Shiluach HaKein. Shiluach HaKein is only when it flies. Wait for the wings to grow, and do the essay, because otherwise, you can't accomplish the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKein. Here you were in violation by taking it. In order to rectify that, you need to now have it fly away. Well, you clipped its wings. Wait for its wings to grow back. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to accomplish Shiluach HaKein. That's Rashi saying that the case afterwards is proof to my explanation. And that's why Rashi favors heavily that second. He says, this is what I think the Machlokes between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda is. And he proves it from the case over here. And the Gemara wants to know, according to whom, is Rav Yehuda giving Malkot here? Ike Rav Yehuda, loke veinu mishaleach. If it's Rav Yehuda, he says that shaleach is beforehand, and you get Malkot because there's no lavanitak de'aseh. So then why did Rav Yehuda demand that he send it away afterwards? He should have just given him Malkot and it been done. Ike Rabbonon, if he holds like the Rabbanon, mishaleach veinu loke. Then you can send it away and you don't get Malkot. So why is he giving him a Malkot and telling him that he has to send it away? He says, Olam ki Rabbonon. Rav Yehuda holds like the Rabbonon. Umakat mardut midrabanan. This was not Malkot midoraita, this is Malkot midrabanan. Because this person was violating an Isur, and the Rabbanon are allowed to, when you violate the Isurim, or mitzvot asay, to intervene and give you Malkot, to put you on the right path. So that's what he was doing over here. He was giving him makat mardut because of his behavior. And then he told him to do Shliach HaKein, which is the Lavanitak Tasei, which is what you need to do, midoraita. So now, even given that it's Makot midrabanan, there's still a problem here, which is that we have a principle, which is that kol mitzvah, shematan skara b'tzida, any mitzvah where the reward is written next to it, which is written over here, it says, l'mani tavlach v'arachta yamim, when you have a mitzvah where the reward is written right by it, over there, the Rabbanan don't intercede or don't intervene. That's because the Torah gives you enough reason or incentive to do it. If you're not willing to take up the incentive of the Torah, we're not going to come and intervene. It's in cases where the reward is not obvious or spelled out, that's where we intervene and give him Makat Mardut. Why is Rav Yehuda giving him Makat Mardut over here if there is a Matan Skara B'tzida in the Torah? So there are different possibilities. One possibility is based on the Sheet of the Balei Tosafot, that's only true when it's just a mitzvah taseh, or it's maybe just a mitzvah lotaseh. But when it's an aseh and a lotaseh together, then we do get makat mardut, even when matan skara b'tzidah. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that this person was a wanton violator, which is that if a person does it once, okay. If he does it over and over again, then we know that the reward is not an incentive, and the Rabbanan will intervene. Or it could be that Rav Yehuda felt that this person was a mechutzah. He was really playing games. He's clipping the wings of the bird. He's sending it away, grabbing it back. He's basically denigrating the mitzvah or belittling the mitzvah, and therefore we would give him a gold. Or the possibility over here where there's no chisaron kis, which we're going to see in a minute, when you're dealing with a mitzvah that does not involve any real expenditure, doesn't require really any effort, and the Mishnah Melech actually brings, the reason you can have Makat Mardot over here is because it's not really a mitzvah Matan Shkara B'tzidah, because the Gemara is going to tell us in the next Mishnah that you see from the Matan Tzchara by Shiluch HaKein, that even for a mitzvah kala, this is the reward. So this is a specific reason it's written here, not to tell you the reward and have it be Matan Tzchara Betzida. And since it's there for a technical reason, it's not classified as Matan Tzchara Betzida, and therefore you can give Melkat Mardut in such a situation. So those are all different possible reasons as to why they intervene over here. How the Atta the Kameh the Rabba? Person came before Rabba, Amalei, Tema Mahu. Tema is a bullfinch. What is the din of such a bird? Amar lo yudaha gavra to of tahor chayav lishluche. Doesn't this person know that when you have a kosher bird, you need to do shiluach hakein? Amalei, Dilma chada bi'atatahu deramyo. Maybe the question wasn't whether I need to shoo it away or not to shoo it away. The question was because there was only one egg or one chick in the nest. And he didn't know if he had to accomplish the mitzvah because it says beitzim or efrochim. So Amalei, hayadilacha, that he also knows matnitani. That's a mishnah. Ein sham el efroch achat ubeitza achat. If you only have one chick or one egg, chayav l'shaleach. You still have to do shiluach hakein. So then the person went to accomplish what Rava said. Shalcha, vahadar la Rava priskate. So he went to do shiluach hakein, and Rava set up a trap to capture the bird when he shoot it away, v'tafsa, and he captured it. Doesn't look good. Aleichush l'chashto. Doesn't that look a little suspicious? Here, the guy's coming to Rava for a psak. At first he thought, he's asking him, does the bullfinch need shiluach hakein? Rava says, doesn't this guy know? It's obvious, only kosher birds need shiluach hakein. It's a kosher bird. So they suggest that maybe he's asking, there's only one egg or one chick. He says, that's also a mishnah, and you have to do shiluach hakein because of kan, mikol makom. That's what we learned in the mishnah, that you send it away no matter what's in the nest. So the guy complies with Rava, sends it away, and Rava sets up a trap to capture the bird when he sends it away. Makes it look like Rava gave the psak in order to capture the bird, and that doesn't look good, and you have to avoid such behavior. Mar says, kilachar yad. He didn't do it in an obvious way. He set up the trap far enough away and a place where the person who was sending it away had no idea that it was set up. So therefore, there was no mirat ayin over here. It didn't look bad, even though, again, if you were asking me, I would say that you want to be naki in these situations. You wouldn't even do such a thing because you don't want any form of suspicion, even if you're preventing it. He made an effort to make sure the guy didn't know about it. But there are always chances that somebody sees it, tells the guy, something like that. You want to avoid it completely. But the Gemara says that if you avoid Maratayin, that it would be okay over here because Rabba's not benefiting from the psak. He's benefiting from the fact that this guy has to do the mitzvah and he has a right to capture the bird. And therefore, if the other guy doesn't see it, it doesn't have a problem with chashto. Tanu Rabbanan, Yone Shobach, Yone Aliyah, Chayavot B'Shiluach. When you have the birds of the dovecote or the birds that are up in the loft, those do require shiluach hakein because they're not considered to be yours. They are considered to be ki karei, not mizuman. Basrot mishum gezel mipnei darkei shalom. But people can't come and take them for themselves because of darkei shalom. Vim ita laha damar Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina. If we follow this position of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, which is chatzero shel adam, kono lo shelo midato, that a person's chatzer can acquire on his behalf, even without his knowing or knowledge, as long as it's a chatzer mishtameret, anything in his chatzer, the chatzer acts on his behalf to accomplish or to capture whatever it is that is there. Kari kan, ki karei prat demizuman. Then why should you be chayav in shiluach hakein over here? Because your chatzer successfully acquired them for you. If that's the case, there's no din of shiluach hakein anymore because now it becomes mizuman. Amarav, the likely gives us Amarova, beitza imitziat ruba hu ichaye b'shiluach, mikna lokani at the tipo the chatzero. There's a timing difference, which is that shiluach hakein, the person's chayav in, when the bird's laying the egg. Once the rove of the egg has exited the mother, the chiyuv of shiluach hakein already devolves. The kinyan that your chatzer makes only happens after the egg has left the bird and falls into the chatzer. The airspace of your chatzer does not capture it for you. The chatzer itself captures it for you. So now, v'chik tani chayavot b'shiluach, when it says your chayav in shiluach again, it's mikame ditipo de chatzero, before it fell into his chatzer. Which means now that statement in the Mishnah is in a very narrow slice of time. which is that it's between the time period in which the roe of the egg is exited the mother, before it falls into the nest or into your chatzer. During that small moment, that's when you're chayav in shiluach. That's what was meant by the Mishnah, that you have to do shiluach hakein in those cases, because it's ki karei and not mizuman, because it's yet to be possessed by your chatzer, but it already is considered to be out of the mother bird. And that small window is when the Mishnah is telling you you're chayav in shiluach hakein. Again, if you come afterwards, you will have no chiyuv in shiluach hakein. You can just take the eggs because it's mizuman. And if you do it too early, there is no mitzvah of shiluach hakein because the egg isn't out yet, and therefore there's no mitzvah. Gemara says, well, Iochi, if you're right about that, amai asurot mishum gezel, why are they asurot because of gezel? I mean, at the time that there's a mitzvah of shiluach hakein, you don't own them yet because of the fact that it hasn't entered into your chatzer. So why is there any problem of gezel, I imam? The one answer is, it's about the mother. There's a problem of a gezel taking the mother bird, not because of the eggs, but because of the mother bird. Vibaitema, lolama beitza. It's speaking about the eggs. Ubeitza came into nofik le ruba date ale. That once the egg leaves the mother bird, even though it's yet to come into his chatzer, the owner of the chatzer already has his eye on it. He already considers it his. So now, that's why there's a restriction of gezel, but only midarkei shalom. It's not real gezel. It's only gezel midarkei shalom because he has in mind to take it. And even though his chatzer has yet to take possession of it, because we know it's in its chatzer and it will end up in its chatzer if you don't intervene, and he has his mind on it, if you come and take it, it's wrong mipnei darkei shalom. Now that we know that Rav Yehuda Merav tells us that you can't take possession of a egg while the mother is incubating them, while the mother's on them, shenemar, shaleach et ha'im, v'adar habanim tikach lach. First shoo away the mother bird, then you have the right to take the chicks or the eggs. Afilu teima apagav d'nafal chatzero. Even if the egg entered your chatzer, you still don't have a problem. Anytime that you yourself can't have the ability to exercise a zchut and make a kinyan, then your chatzero, namizakya, can act on your behalf as well. Anytime that you don't have the capacity to make a kinyan or be zocheh, chatzero, namilo zocheh, then too, your chatzer also can't do it on your behalf. Over here, you do not have a right to take the eggs until you shoo away the mother bird. You're not allowed to take possession of the banim until the mother bird is shooed away. That means if you went to do this in any other circumstance, you would not have the capacity to take the chicks or the eggs without shooing away the mother bird. That means while the mother bird's on them, you have no rights to those eggs, you have no rights to those chicks. Now, moving into your chatzer, you have the same problem. You can't do it, your chatzer can't do it. Your chatzer can't be koneh, the chicks or the eggs here, because the mother is incubating them. While the mother's on them, you have no right to take possession of them. If you can't do it, your chatzer can't do it on your behalf as well. And so therefore now, even if the egg is laid and it's sitting in your chatzer, it's not called mizuman, because you don't have a right of kinyan over here. It's still ki karei, because you don't take possession of it until the mother bird is shooed away. Once the mother bird is shooed away, then you have a right to it, and your chatzer will take possession of it on your behalf. Now the Gemara says, Yochei amai asurot mipnei darkei shalom. Then what's the issue over here? Why do you have any rights to these eggs or chicks any more than anyone else? Why is there a problem of a third party taking them? Because you have no rights to them. You have no ownership over them. If the person who came to take those eggs and chicks sent away the mother bird, gezel malio, then your chatzer can act on your behalf, and it's a full-fledged ownership, and there's real gezel. If the third party came and didn't send away or shoo away the mother bird, shluchei boi, you still need to do shliuach hakein in order to take possession of them, and therefore you can't take possession of them, you can't take them until you shoot away the mother bird. The Gemara says, bikaton. It's a case where a minor comes to take them, and the minor is not subject to the din or the requirements of shiluach hakein. So that's why, so when he takes the eggs or the chicks, he's not in violation because he's a minor. So then it becomes stealing midrabanan. And the Gemara asks about that. Wait a minute, katan bar darkei shalom ho? Darkei shalom is between mature adults or mature individuals. Then you have a certain amount of respect for other people's property. You have certain social graces, etiquette, and social policies that we have between us. And Mibnei Darkei Shalom, you can argue that the person taking it is doing the wrong thing. Right? Katan, who doesn't have the mindset, or maybe even the capacity to understand that type of social grace or social policy, how can you say to him that Darkei Shalom, give it back? It's not the Katan himself that has to give it back, but rather the father of the Katan is really responsible to teach him that that's not the right way to behave, and he needs to give back the eggs or the chicks. So the responsibility is on the father, not on the child, but the child did it, and that's how you have a case here where he took them before you came into possession of them. Because he didn't shoo away the mother bird. By not shooing away the mother bird, your chaser doesn't have the capacity to take possession of them. And now when he takes the eggs, he's in violation of shiluach hakain, but a chatan is not chayav in mitzvot. And therefore he's not in violation and he takes the eggs. He's successful at taking the eggs or the chicks. Then why does he have to return there? And what's the problem, Darkei Shalom? That's because we hold the father responsible for the behavior of the child. And the father has to return them or has to pay for them because of the fact that he is obligated in Darkei Shalom and ensuring that his children or his family act in that manner. Now the truth is, you don't have to come to a katan to have this case. The easiest case would be if somebody just took their hand in there and took the egg or the chick. Then you're in violation of the law, but you still got possession of it. Because you didn't do the shiluach hakein, therefore his chatzer can't take possession of it. You took it illegally, now you got the item and you've been taking possession of it. So the Gemara could have given that answer as well. Rashi says it didn't offer that. The Gemara always likes to give a path that is of heter rather than a path of isur. So he chose to say katan rather than just a violator. Because if we could find a way to have the case be manifest without violation, we'd rather explain it that way than explain it with a violation. Mara says, Levi bar Simon, akne peirot shevcho de Rabbi Yehuda. He gave over, whether it's as a gift or through a purchase, and a kinyan, he gave over whatever the product or production of his dovkot was, he gave that to Rabbi Yehuda. After the gamei to Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda went to Shmuel, Amalei, Shmuel tells him, zil toru fakein, go shake the nest, the ligavu vikaninu, so that they move, and then you'll get a kinyan on them. Lamai, what type of kinyan? Elam mikna, if he wants to take possession of them, liknehu le besudar, you could just do a kinyan chalipin with the owner, meaning Levi bar Simon, and then you could accomplish that with a kinyan sudar. Why do you have to go physically and have them be lifted up in order for you to make a kinyan over here? Ibi yomto, if we're speaking about yomto because you want them to be muhan, so that you can eat them on Yom Tov, Beit Hillel believes, Vomeid Vomer, Zibazeh, Anino Tel Sagya. You can go over to the Dovkot, point to this, point to that, and say, I'm going to eat them on Yom Tov, I'm going to eat them on Yom Tov. You take away the problem of Mukhan Muksa, and you can eat them on Yom Tov. You don't have to actually lift them up, you don't have to shoo away a bird. Hanu Perei Chadatei Habu. These were brand new chicks or eggs. The Levi Bar Simon Gufei Lo Hava Kone Lo. Levi Bar Simon himself didn't have possession of them, to give them to Rabbi Yehuda. V'alcha kamilei. This is what Shmuel advises Rabbi Yehuda to do. Zil v'tarei fakein. Go shake the nest. Delit gabu. That the mother bird will fly away, raise up or go up. V'nikninu Levi bar Simon. And then Levi bar Simon's chatzer will take possession of them on his behalf. V'hada liknehu nialach besudar. And now you can transact with them. Because until he owns them, he can't sell you something he doesn't own. So what you want to do is create an ownership for him so that by which your kinyan now is effective to acquire what he's selling you. If he doesn't own it, can't sell you something he doesn't own. So the advice was to shake it in order to force the acquisition of the peirot, whether it's the chicks or the eggs that are in the nest, that his chatzer will take possession. So now it's a valid sale, but then you do a kinyan sugar, a kinyan chalipin afterwards, you do a representative kinyan. That kinyan will be successful at acquiring the birds on your behalf because now Levi bar Simon owns them. Both the Tosafot and the Rosh and Bava Metzia prove from this that this tells us a little about kinyan hagbah and shiluach hakein. First of all, over here, you just have to shake the nest and have the bird move away. That was enough, so that's a very limited scope in terms of shiluach hakein. Number two is we classify that as being hagbah when you do such a thing. That means that you don't have to physically lift up the animal in order to be a kinyan hagbah. You can also do something that forces the animal to go up or move, and that's enough. It doesn't have to be your direct contact with the animal. It just means you have to be the facilitator of such a movement. And over here, that's the facilitation of such a movement is done by shaking the nest. That's enough. You don't need a physical kinyan hagbah. It's enough that your shaking causes them to rise or to lift up. And the last thing is, it seems to favor the view that you don't need to raise it three tefachim in order to be a kinyan hagbah. would seem to be that a very small movement would be enough to be a kinyan agbah in this case. Although the Rashash questions their conclusion, because over here we're dealing with a situation in which there was no need for hagbah. He wasn't making a kinyan agbah. The reason he needed the bird to fly away was so that he accomplished the luach hakein, and that would not be a me'akev for the chatzer to take possession of it. And so he wasn't really trying to accomplish hagbah, rather trying to accomplish a kinyan chatzer by eliminating the problem of shliluach ha'aim being an impediment to that. And therefore the Rashash leaves it at Tzavach Iyun as to how they actually learned these halachot about kinyan hagbah from something that really isn't a kinyan hagbah. But the Shach in Choshen Mishpat Reish Pei Tet says that the proof is not from the maskana of the Gemara, but rather from the hava min of the Gemara, where we thought that Rabbi Yehuda's question was, how do I take possession of them? And therefore, based on the answer of the Gemara, given that hava mina, then we would have learned dini hagbah, even though in the end, the real reason over here is not because of hagbah, but rather because to get Levi Bar Simon his access, but because the hava mina was otherwise, the Mishonim therefore see this as being an indication of what you need for kinyan hagbah. All right, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Mem Pei Amud Aleph.